Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Cracking the Habit Code, 21 Days to Keeping Your Resolutions. We're in day two. Today, we're talking about your brain on autopilot, how we get those resolutions on autopilot so they don't take so much effort out of our everyday life. Today, we're going to talk about why exactly our resolutions are really easy once they become habits. And then we're going to talk about the foundations of a habit, which are the anchor, the actual routine or the habit, and the reward. Those three things go together, and we can't leave any one of them out. And then I'm going to coach you to build a habit. And I've written it like that, just like that children's workshop, Build a Bear, because I think of this being very similar. It's pretty simple. There are very few components, and it should provide you with a lot of comfort, just like those teddy bears that the children build at birthday parties. So first, we're going to start with a little bit of Habits 101. And the first thing that I want you to know is that when we try to do something new, it actually takes a ton of willpower, energy, or effort. And we probably have this experience under our belt already. We know that it takes a lot of conscious energy to do something that's new. And we also probably all know that when we get tired or stressed, our efforts start to fail. So we might do really well at avoiding sugary treats while we're well rested, but then as soon as we get stressed and somebody offers us a cookie, we're the first to take up on it. Or we might do really well with our exercise plan when we're well rested, but as soon as we start to get short on sleep, we hit snooze instead of getting out of bed to go for that morning jog. And this is because the newer part of our brain, in evolutionary terms, is our what I think of as our smarty pants prefrontal cortex. It's the front part of your brain, and it's really the area that sets us apart from our family dog or from other mammals. It allows us to plan. It allows conscious effort. We love this. It's what makes us human. But it's really energy inefficient. It's kind of a gas guzzler. It requires a lot of effort and energy to make it tick. And unfortunately, the more we use it throughout a particular day, the less reliable it becomes. Now, we're going to spend a lot of time on making that more reliable in the third week and understanding why that is so that we can prevent it from happening. But we've already got a built-in backup plan in our brain that is very energy efficient. It's like the hybrid engine or the electric engine in a hybrid. So our backup plan is called the basal ganglia. It's a really primitive knob of tissue deep in our brain that is our own personal autopilot. It's where all our habits are stored. Routines and habits really allow us to access this energy efficient part of our brain. So the basal ganglia is, among other things, our habit centers. Think of it as your hard drive for your habits. And once it's programmed, it requires no effort on our part to accomplish really, truly amazing feats. This cannot be understated. I'm not exaggerating. If you want more evidence of this, I highly recommend Charles Duhigg's book, The Power of Habits, in particular the chapter where he details the way that Olympic swimmer Michael Phelps won his world records simply by honing his habits. So this is very common to a lot of athletes. And from athletes and other really successful people, I feel like we've learned a lot about how habits are really critical cornerstones for our happiness in a way that most of us don't even really realize it. So about 40% of the actual actions or behaviors people perform each day weren't actual decisions, but habits, or don't tend to be actual decisions, but habits. This is something that research shows. We also know that a huge proportion of our brain activity is actually unconscious brain activity. So not 40%, it's more like 95% of our brain activity. I actually really like Charles Duhigg's definition of habits, and I think it's helpful here. He defines a habit as the choice that all of us make, or the choices that all of us deliberately make at some point and then stop thinking about but continue doing often every day. So what we know is that routines can make us feel habitually good or healthy or productive, or they can make us feel habitually bad if we have bad habits. The good habits are a real key to our success. So if you watch any video of an elite athlete or performer before a big game or show, you're really likely to see one thing, and that is their pre-performance habits, or the things that they do every single time in exactly the same way. So we know that habits are a key to success, not just for game day or for elite performers, but for normal people like you and I, for raising children, for being happy in our relationships, for being happy as individuals. It's about half of all of our behaviors every day come from that pre-programmed center in our brain. So to understand the energy consumption behind this a little bit better, think about all the brain activity when you're consciously doing something new versus when you're doing something that is already habit. So researchers track this brain activity in rats, and the difference between when a rat is learning to do something new and when a rat is doing something that is habitual is incredibly different. There's obviously a lot more brain activity when we are learning something or doing something new or doing something consciously. So what we see in the research in rats is very obviously true in humans as well. Think about the first time you started an exercise routine, for example. You've got to decide what to wear, what shoes, what time to go, what to do. Maybe you're going to walk on the treadmill, but then you need to decide the incline, the speed. You need to decide which stretches to do, how long to stay on the treadmill. But this is really easily made into a habit, right? So after a while, you don't need to make any of those decisions. You don't need to reference your notes to look up exercises or stretches or whatever. All that brain activity ceases. And so when those decision-making centers in our brain can quiet down, that all those brain structures related to memory will quiet. And so it's true, we hardly need to think at all to actually do something that can be quite strenuous, like, you know, swim in an Olympic race or do something that was previously incredibly difficult for us. We can do those things without thought, which is very, very energy efficient for us. So there's more good news here. Bad habits or routines can actually be changed into good ones. It's easier to change a bad habit into a good one than it is to just quit it, just stop doing something. Neutral habits can be expanded to include our new resolutions. So maybe you're already in the habit of brushing your teeth and you want to add flossing. So you're just expanding an existing habit, which is a lot easier than starting a new one altogether. But what we know, so the net here is that using willpower to change our lives is really hard. That's why we often fail when we're only using willpower. But once our habits are established, our change comes much, much more effortlessly. So the takeaway here is that when a habit emerges, the brain stops fully participating in decision-making, and that gives us lots of energy for other things, makes things feel simple and easy, which is the whole goal here. So I've got a little caveat to this because a lot of the time I get people who resist this idea of putting our lives on autopilot because they are feeling like they're trying really hard not to be on autopilot. They're trying to be more mindful. So mindfulness is when we consciously pay attention to what we're experiencing in the present moment without judging our thoughts and feelings as either good or bad. So we're not judging our experience, we're just paying attention to it. And the reason that I think that this is really worth mentioning is that mindfulness is a research-tested way to reduce stress. It's obviously the foundation of Buddhism, and where I am in Berkeley, it's very popular. It's a really great strategy for happiness, to be more mindful. So I wouldn't want you to make a New Year's resolution that was going to make you less mindful, because I think that that would make you less happy. So I would never advocate that. And I am, in fact, not advocating that. But I wanted to mention this because if you're worried about becoming less mindful, I want you to think about your breathing. So paying attention to your breath, or the breath, is really the gold standard of any meditation or mindfulness practice. So you know, there's an irony here because breathing is also one thing that we do totally unconsciously pretty often. And in fact, we know that we can pay mindful attention to our breathing. So even though our breathing is on autopilot, it's being run from an unconscious part of our brain. That's great. We want it to keep running from there. We're not activating any decision centers in order to breathe throughout the day. We can still pay mindful attention to our breath, that this can still be a mindfulness practice. So the ultimate goal, I think, for happiness is to be mindful while on autopilot. So we have all these habits and routines that really make us happy. We exercise, we get enough sleep, we meditate maybe, we eat healthfully, whatever it is your resolutions are, whatever it is you're trying to improve about your life. Hopefully those things will make you happier. Hopefully also you can get them on autopilot. In fact, I know you will be able to by following this program. That's exactly what this whole thing is about, is to make it into a habit. And then once it's a habit, you're going to be doing it anyway. You can pay mindful attention to it as another strategy to, you know, be happier in our lives. So the next thing that we're going to do is learn about the different components of a habit, and we're going to actually construct our resolutions as habits really specifically. But before I teach you about those components, I think I need to give you some cliff notes about bad habits, because it won't make sense to you to what you're trying to do is get rid of a bad habit instead of start a positive one. Now, yesterday you should have reconstructed your resolution in the positive, and we're going to just work on that even more today, becoming more specific. But the notes that I want you to have about bad habits are that your brain really can't tell the difference between good habits and bad habits, and it will cling incredibly strongly to them both. So once a habit is established, it's easier to just alter the routine that's in place, the actual middle part, you'll learn in a second, of the habit, than it is to just quit it. So to change a habit, we're going to keep the same anchor or trigger or cue, and we're going to keep the same reward. So you're about to learn about those two things, but we're going to insert a new routine. I just want you to have that up front to hold for you. I want you to consider today's quote for the day, or part of it anyway, and that's that habits are so powerful that they can cause our brains to cling to them at the exclusion of all else, including common sense. So I'm telling you this, and I'm going to read you a little part from Charles Duhigg's book, The Power of Habit, because I'm wanting to really drive this point home, that if you're in a bad habit and you think that you can just stop doing it, and that's what your New Year's resolution is, or what you'd like to change about yourself, but you'd really like to not have to go through the work of constructing a new habit, I want you to listen to this description of some research. It's from page 26 of The Power of Habit, which was written by Charles Duhigg. Researchers trained mice to press levers in response to certain cues until the behavior became a habit. The mice were always rewarded with food. Then the scientists poisoned the food so that it made the animals violently ill, or they electrified the floor so that when the mice walked toward their reward, they received a shock. The mice knew the food and cage were dangerous. When they were offered the poisoned pellets in a bowl or saw the electrified floor panels, they stayed away. When they saw their old cues, however, those are the things that we're going to be talking about as anchors in a minute, when they saw their old cues, however, they unthinkingly pressed the lever and ate the food, or they walked across the floor even as they vomited or jumped from the electricity. The habit was so ingrained, the mice couldn't stop themselves. So we just need to be realistic about how incredibly powerful that habit center of our brain is. It can really overrule any decision-making that we might be doing. Okay, now on to the best part from my perspective is to really learn about these three parts of a habit, and we're going to actually craft this today. So I want you to get out your day two worksheet. I will wait, press pause, so that you have that in front of you. Now, the first thing that we're going to do is we're going to look at the anchor. So the anchor is what is the behavior that cues or triggers your habit. The anchor is what tells your brain to go into automatic mode and then which habit to use. So an example of an anchor might be, you know, when you're brushing your teeth, you just reach for your toothbrush and then that tells your brain to get out the toothpaste and put it on your toothbrush and then brush your teeth. You know, each of us has hundreds of these little routines. All of these are habits that carry us through the day, right? And all of these little habits have an anchor behavior. It could be, you know, a trigger from somebody else. It might not necessarily be our behavior. It might be an external cue that that anchors a habit. It doesn't have to be something specifically you do. So my favorite anchor ever when I'm trying to get into a new habit is simply waking up. So I, you know, my alarm going off cues a whole series of habitual behaviors where when I wake up, I get up, I meditate, I exercise, I shower, and then I do a whole series of things with my children. And I built that a little tiny bit at a time. All those routines didn't come all at once, of course. But the anchor did. So I hear my alarm go off and my decision-making centers in my brain are very quiet. I don't have to decide whether or not to check my email or go make coffee before I do anything else. I just do things because it's coming from that pre-programmed part of my brain that is very, very powerful. So another anchor could be maybe you're trying to stop yelling at your children in the morning. And so the anchor is when you notice you're running late or when one of them starts to snit at the other one and you can tell that they're about to fight or whatever it is. Notice what's triggering the yelling, right? And then we're going to change the routine there. So that's the next piece is the routine. It's the most important part, right? But we can't do this without any one of these things. So the routine is, of course, what exactly it is you do. And what I want you to do is write this down on your worksheet. So on your worksheet, write down your anchor. And then in maybe 5 or 10 minute increments, if you need to, or in each action, specific action in order, write down what the routine that you're trying to get into is. So a routine can be physical or mental or emotional. These can be behaviors. These can be things that you want to think in order to feel a certain way. A lot of our existing habits are really emotional, right? We have a trigger and then we automatically feel angry. Somebody cuts us off in traffic and we automatically feel angry. Now, here's the thing. This is all gameable. You might have to fight for it a little bit, but somebody cuts you off in traffic, you can habitually learn to feel compassion for that person or to give them the benefit of the doubt, to automatically think, wow, I bet they're having a bad day or they're in a hurry because for whatever reason, right? So this can be for anything. So what I want you to do right now is write down your routine. What specifically will you do when you've encountered your anchor or your trigger for your new resolution? And if it's pretty elaborate, like it's an exercise routine where you stretch first and then you say you stretch and then you walk on the treadmill and then you do some strength training and then I like to roll on a foam roller afterwards to loosen my muscles up. So maybe that's what it is, do it in 5 minute increments so you know specifically what it is you're doing. And for something to be habitual, you have to do them in the same order every day. So pay attention to that order. And then the last part of this is the reward. So that's what helps your brain figure out if this particular routine is worth remembering or repeating in the future. So for me, usually what my reward is when I'm starting a new habit is just, what I think of as a yay me, right? So I just do it, and then I take a minute immediately to say, "Woo! I did it! Yay me!" So it's just a little, giving myself a little hit of a feelings of accomplishment. This is so simple, but a lot of times we forget to do this, and the reward is really, really, really important. We want to go for instant gratification here, not to depend on other people to satisfy our rewards. So, you know, oftentimes, "I'm doing it" is better than waiting for a response from other people. So this reward needs to be good enough, though, that it creates or satisfies a craving in our brain, right? So when we exercise a lot, we start to crave the endorphins and other neurochemicals exercise provides. Just that sense of accomplishment or triumph, that self-reward, can be enough to make a physical activity into a habit. And, you know, or maybe, so maybe you're the parent who's trying to stop yelling at her kids or his kids, and you notice your trigger, and your routine is to take a deep breath or take 5 deep breaths before you address the situation. So the reward can come from a sense of calm and relaxation that comes from deep breathing, right? There's a built-in reward there, so that's really good. But you can also add the accomplishment of not yelling. So, you know, those are good kind of go-to rewards, but I also want you to brainstorm a little bit. Think about what other rewards that you could give you. What would you come to crave? So when I exercise, I actually find it really rewarding to sweat. It's the sweat itself that creates a sense of accomplishment for me. I don't know why, but that is rewarding for me. You know, I also like to listen to audiobooks when I'm exercising, or I like to exercise with friends. And those are really great rewards that I can build in. I'll actually look forward to listening to the audiobook. And so that makes the exercise more motivating to me. You know, maybe for you, it's that you get to wear your yoga pants all day, or, you know, it's going to be different for each of us. But only when our brains start expecting the reward and craving that reward, so maybe it's craving the endorphins, or maybe it's craving that sense of accomplishment, only when our brain starts expecting that reward will it become automatic for us to lace up our jogging shoes each morning, or whatever it is we're trying to do. So the cue comes to trigger not just the routine. So that anchor triggers not just the routine behaviors, but it also triggers a craving for the reward. So that's a really important point. The anchor is not just the routine, the behavior we're trying to change or to do, start, but it anchors the reward as well. It anchors a craving. So, you know, when my alarm goes off, I have sort of a craving to meditate, and then a craving to get on the treadmill. As boring as that sounds, I do. I'm ready to get moving. So the inherent reward of the inspiration I find in my meditations, I actually listen to meditation tapes, and I find them very inspiring. And so just, you know, waking up in the morning, I start to crave that inspiration. Inspiration is really a positive emotion. And so it works really well for me as a craving. And then, you know, I actually have a second anchor probably in there. When I finish my meditation, I go on to do some exercise, and I have a craving there for the sweat, the audiobook. I have many things built in to that. So let's make that reward a part of your routine on your worksheet. So think of, you know, maybe it's a smoothie that you're going to give yourself after you work out, or the endorphin rush that you're going to feel. And, you know, take a minute to really allow yourself to anticipate that reward before you actually start your routine. So put that into your routine. So you might wake up and then think of the reward before you actually, as your first behavior, and eventually craving for that reward will make it easier to push through the gym drawers every day, or whatever. It will give you some motivation. So we want to put that thinking about what your reward is as your first behavior, and rewarding yourself or thinking about reflecting on the reward that you've already gotten as your last behavior, because we're really trying to associate in our brain the reward with the behavior, because that's how our brain figures out that this particular habit is worth doing again. Okay, so here we're ready for our daily practice, and we're creating our habit specifically today. So I want you to remember that we have lots of research, studies of people who successfully started new exercise routines tend to show that they're much more likely to stick with a workout plan if they choose that specific anchor, like running as soon as they get home from work, and if they choose a clear reward, such as maybe a smoothie after your morning exercise, or maybe an evening of guilt-free TV right after you finish exercising, or after you eat all your veggies for dinner or something like that, whatever you're trying to change in your life. And actually, research on dieting, speaking of food, says that creating new food habits requires a predetermined cue. So that's what we're doing here. We're figuring out those predetermined anchors and then predetermining the routine. So dieters are much more successful when they plan their menus in advance, for example, and when they have simple rewards for when they stick to their intentions. So a simple reward, a reward can be emotional, a reward can be something physical that you give yourself. It can be as simple as a sense of accomplishment. So I want you to start using your anchor or trigger or cue daily if possible. So I know that your New Year's resolution might be to exercise twice a week, but we're going to talk a lot tomorrow about getting into habits. And if you can identify your anchor and follow it with a small behavior every single day for a while, that's going to really help you start this habit faster. We're going to talk about that more tomorrow. I want you to really pay attention to order and do your routine in the same order every single day. So on your worksheet, you should have written out your routine. It might be a list of things, of behaviors that could be done in any particular order. It doesn't matter to you which order, but I want it to matter to you. I want you to pick an order and then make a list that you know, it's kind of a note card, so until you learn it, so that you do things in the same order. Because remember, each behavior effectively starts to anchor the next one. So think about my morning routine. If I were to exercise, then shower, then meditate, one day, and then the next day meditate, then exercise, then shower, it won't become a habit in the same way. I will have lost that anchor routine reward cycle. And then the last thing is just a little reminder, do not forget to reward yourself. It won't work if you do. So think, what will you come to crave? And give yourself those things. All right, great job, everybody. Thank you for hanging in there, and I really look forward to talking with you all tomorrow.